And do we have the one and only, the illustrious Representative Mike Pitts. How you doing today, Mike?
I'm doing well. I'm running about an hour behind, but other than that, I'm doing well.
Well, I did say when you put out an APB warning, you do get a response usually on the radio.
Well, I apologize, Ann. Time slipped up on me. I don't wear a watch. I depend on my phone. And I left my phone at home. When I finally realized what time it was, I realized I was in a predicament.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, we're glad to have you here on the phone. We'll have to get you here in studio another Monday when you're not down there in Columbia. But you certainly have been stirring up a hornet's nest out there, Mike Pitts.
Oh, it was by design.
It was by design. You know, a lot of people got really upset with you, particularly a lot of journalists and whatnot. I was reading an article for the, the attorney that was on hand for the South Carolina Broadcasters Association. They asked him what people should say when asked about this, and he said, just laugh.
Well, that's what I've been doing, Ann.
Yeah. Why did you do that, Mike?
Well, about 3 months ago, I was having a discussion with some attorneys and a couple of other legislators in Columbia during a break in some meetings, and we were discussing the media as a whole and how it's far different than it once was. And I said, I wonder what would happen if we put the shoe on the other foot. And one of the attorneys that deals in constitutional law and ethics law said, what do you mean? I said, perhaps we put a law in place or put a bill in place that implies a law that makes them hold to the same standard that Second Amendment is held to. He started laughing. I said, yep, I'm going to take the CWP law for the state of South Carolina and apply that to journalists. And the first thing they're going to do is scream First Amendment right. And then they're going to scream purity of the First Amendment
right.
And simplicity of the First Amendment. And he said, that's brilliant. he said, because you're absolutely testing them on what they demonize. And I said, you're absolutely right. So I did. I sat down and I drafted a bill that transposed the concealed weapons permitting registry to journalists and used the criteria for the law. The elements of the law are nothing but the code of ethics for the Journalism Association and the Broadcasters Association. So if you violate that law, you would have violated your own code of ethics.
True.
And my point was this. My point was, and I sat down and wrote this stuff out. About two months ago is when I sat down and wrote it out. I said, first of all, I'll file the bill, then I will give an interview to two newspapers on each end of the state. What will happen then will be regurgitation of that. First, there'll be an explosion over the bill. Then there will be much fanfare. There will be much sensationalism and dramatic impulse that will come out of TV, radio, and newspapers. There will be much simple regurgitation. There will be embellishment. And then there will be slant, and there will be hypocrisy in the process, and every bit of it came true over a weekend.
That's true.
The first thing I did was gave an interview to the Post and Courier. the Post and Courier and the Index Journal. Now, what I've got to say is both did a fair article on the content of the bill itself. And where I was headed with that. In the meantime, Word Radio and Greenville, some other radio stations, mainly folks not like you, Ann, that know me, took off with it. I became the dictator of North Korea. I became a Russian. I became a Chinese, trying to shut down all free speech. And they took that bill, they being the mainstream media, jumped on the Post and Courier's article, which led off with two paragraphs. And that's where the slant and the hypocrisy comes in, because they said it was, they painted the picture of the guy that fought to keep the flag flying.
Right.
And we both know not one amendment that I had tried to keep the flag flying on the State House grounds, not a single one of them. The second thing that they talked about was an ethics series of ethics articles they had done, one of which I was reimbursed for a speaking engagement. They wrote about that, about $1,100 for travel and expense to go to the West Coast. I topped my car off when I had returned it, which is what you're required to do with a rental car.
Sure.
So I did that out of my campaign account. Now, they said Representative Pitts takes a junket for $1,100 campaign money and topped his car off $11, $14, whatever it was, and said that the last line of that story said Representative Pitts actually did nothing illegal.
Right. Yeah, I've got that article right here, Mike. Yep.
Well, that article right there in front of you. They took those two things and led off with two paragraphs in that Index Journal, Post and Courier article, and moved forward with it. Now, that painted, that bias painted a picture for a reader of me before they ever got to the meat of the article. The second thing is national media started picking up on it and embellishing it. And I'll skip to the chase. The final one was the fair and balanced Fox News. That bastion of unbiased, unslanted reporting and journalism.
Yeah.
Shepard Smith took that article, did a 5-minute segment on it, including world map with all the countries that shut the press down, and said the legislator that fought to keep the flag on the State House dome, the legislator that spent thousands of taxpayer dollars on junkets to the West, both of which are absolutely false. Then he went into the story saying that I was trying to shut down all freedom of speech.
Mike, did they ever call and want to talk to you about this?
No.
You know, that is where I think is the biggest rub of all, isn't it? Because they didn't give you, they just slanted the story and didn't give you the opportunity to either A, set the record straight, or give your side of the view here.
No, they did not. Reporters did not call me. I will say this, Greta Van Susteren called, and I was going to do the show for Greta Van Susteren to answer on the bill and to set the record straight.
Right.
We had the ice storm, and they shut down the Fox News affiliate in Greenville, and I couldn't get to it.
Hmm.
So Greta gave me an opportunity to set the record straight, but that That never happened. And Shepard Smith never did, Fox News and Shepard Smith never did one bit of fact-checking before that totally embellished and just out-and-outright lied article. And you're right. WORD did call me. After they spent 2 days blasting me, they finally called, and I talked to them. Now, any journalist out there that I have talked to on radio stations or on TV said personally, one-on-one, you know, you're right. And I said, the purity of the First Amendment is absolute, just like the purity of all of the Bill of Rights is absolute. We've had an erosion of our Fourth Amendment rights. My son came to me today and asked, Dad, how can they get all this information about me off the internet and about my daughter if they Google me? I said, son, that is the federal government allowing your privacy, your Fourth Amendment right to be violated. And he didn't understand that, but we've had a total erosion, or not a total erosion, but a steady erosion of the Bill of Rights. And they were written simple. They are very clear. They are not to be violated. And that was my point, that the media exploded when it was targeted at them, when the shoe came to the other foot. And let me tell you this, Ann, they did not complain about religious freedom. They did not complain about the assembly part of the First Amendment. They didn't really complain about the right of free speech. They complained about the Congress shall pass no law to abridge the right of a free press.
Well, you know, it looks like, Mike, as quite often you do, you kind of hit the nail on the head here, and when you hit that nail, it created a reaction that has spanned the whole country, and, you know, did you think it was going to go this big, though?
I did, but I didn't think it would go that fast. I miscalculated on social media.
Yeah, social media will take it every time, won't they, anymore?
Well, they did, and I'll tell you what was the worst part for me, and it's something I really didn't anticipate, Ann, was the number of my constituents, the number of average citizens out there that took one bullet point or one sound bite and went with it. I'm getting hate mail saying, how can you be so stupid? And I'm thinking, I'm not the one that bit on Shepard Smith's report without checking any facts.
Well, that is a shame. But that, you know what, Mike, that just shows how much power the media, social media, the media has. And that is the shame about what is happening in all aspects of the news, shall we say.
I agree with you 100%. During my press conference, I did a press conference, and that was how I fully intended to close the thing out, was to do a press conference and give the media, the printed press, the audio and the video media, the ability to do to report however they wanted to on it. Sure. And my final statement to all of them at that press conference was, I was told don't ever pick a fight with someone who buys ink by the barrel and paper by the ton. And I did. Now, when you leave here today, you can use one soundbite. You'll be able to slant this story however you want to, and there's not a damn thing I can do about it. But you know that you've been had. And I got to say this, too, Ann. There are good reporters out there. There are good young journalists who will write a fair story, and then an editor
will
make it an editorial as opposed to a report.
Right. And you know, but we see this over and over. And you know what happens to, well, to me anyways, whenever I see something and I go, well, that's a little outlandish, I have to question the source. I have to question whether that is even plausible and what should I do about it. So it really is a shame, because it used to be you could count on the 6 o'clock news, Mike.
That's exactly right. When I was growing up, you could count on the news report being accurate. And you can't do that today. And part of it is the dollar. And that's what I did a 30-minute press interview. Actually, it was longer than that. And it can be found online, a press conference. And I told them that. I said, I understand editors forcing you to put a slant and put a bias into your reports. I understand that. I don't like it, but I understand how it happens. And I understand how one of the news stations in the upstate on the 6 o'clock TV news embellishes everything and sensationalizes. Hell, even the weather person says, there's a snowflake falling. And it's like it's a bomb just hit.
Yeah, you better go out and buy bread and milk.
Better go buy bread and milk.
Yep.
And you know, they are reaching a point through hypocrisy that people are losing faith in the media at large with reporting, and it shows in Donald Trump's campaign, because every time he blasts the media, he rises in the polls.
Well, you know, this thing about being angry seems to have become an okay thing for everybody. I mean, Bernie Sanders' group, they're angry. Donald Trump's group is angry. I mean, it's just angry, and that seems to be the way, instead of using logical consensus on what exactly is the story. If you had printed your story exactly as it was and hadn't gotten it all out of whack, would there have been the same outcry if it had been, oh, well, let's think about this?
Well, you know, the dean of the journalism school at the University of South Carolina wanted to know what it was about the simplistic language of the First Amendment that I could not understand. And again, I quote, Congress shall make no law abridging the right of a free press. My reply to him was, what do you not understand about the simplicity of the Second Amendment? The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed.
Yeah, and so where, just to talk about maybe some other things, where are we at on this concealed carry? I mean, hasn't it not having to have concealed carry?
Well, there's a lot of debate on that. I was on Lock and Load, which is a nationally syndicated gun rights show this past week. And there's three bills in the Senate that have passed. Two passed out of the House and one originated in the Senate. One is open carry, one is constitutional carry concealed, and one gives us reciprocity with Georgia. The reciprocity with Georgia bill I have supported, because we have North Augusta, for example. North Augusta lies in two states.
Sure.
And according to where you live along the line within that city, it's where you can carry a handgun, even with a concealed weapons permit. Because if you're on the Georgia side of the line and you're a South Carolina resident with a South Carolina CWP, you're in violation if you have your handgun on. Same thing if you're a Georgia CWP holder and you happen to be in the South Carolina part of that city. So Bill Hickson from Aiken had put a bill in that gave straight reciprocity with Georgia. That bill's hung up in the Senate. One bill, which was mine, gave constitutional carry, permitless carry, as long as you could legally purchase a firearm and you carried it concealed. Many people want to be able to carry a firearm openly, and personally, I disagree with that. And the reason is simple. I spent hours as a police officer and in the military on weapons retention. And if you don't train on it, someone can take your weapon in the blink of an eye.
That makes good sense. That makes very good sense. So, where do you think those bills are going this year?
Nowhere. And
oh, that's right. This is an election year. Are we going to do anything down there this year, or is it just going to be all talk and no action?
Well, the House is currently, we're writing a budget, and my personal opinion is we should do something on the roads issue. We should deal with that ASAP, and we're going to have to do something on the pension issue because of the liability to the taxpayers. We've got to address that issue.
Okay.
Now, whether or not the Senate moves on, it's a different question.
Well,
the Senate did pass a bill out that's coming to us that I hope we can take straight to the floor. That's shortening the session by a month. That'll save the taxpayer several thousand dollars.
Yeah, but then didn't you introduce a bill to up the pay for legislators?
I did. To up the pay for legislators, but it also put term limits on legislators in the same process.
Correct. What, 12 years? Is that right? 12-year limits?
That's correct. That would be 3 Senate terms or 6 House terms. And that bill, I would not be eligible to receive that pay.
To receive what pay?
If it went to that average state salary, those currently serving would not be eligible to receive that pay.
So this would be for future legislators.
That's correct, and it goes along with what you and I have talked about before. You're going to have to do something, or the way this country was founded, with citizen legislators going to serve your government, is going to be a thing of the past. It's hard enough to get people to run as it is. There was a district race, a House district race in the Low State, and I had 2 calls from very conservative folks down there that said, we can't find anybody to run.
Well, that is a problem. And how do you do it when 6 months out of the year you are down there in Columbia three days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, correct?
Well, and that's average. I'm down there quite often 4 days a week because of committee assignments.
Sure.
And then the 6 months that we're not in session, this past year I was in Columbia 2 to 3 days a week when we weren't in session.
And how much do you make for that, Mike?
That's $10,400 a year.
Well, I mean, surely that's just a base, right? That doesn't include all that extra time. Surely you must be getting paid extra.
You get paid $1,000 a month for in-district expense. That's gas, post office, any secretarial work, anything that you have done back in your home district or in your county that comes out of that. That's also taxed. So it ends up being about $750 a month instead of $1,000 a month. And that's supposed to cover meals in district, anything. If I'm invited to go to a banquet or something, tickets are $50. That's what that's for.
Sure. Well, you know, I don't see how anybody, unless they are retired or have a business that just runs itself, can do that.
We have one of the three longest sessions. We're in the top three, tied with for the longest session, and we're in the least pay at the same time. And I also said I would be happy to go the other direction. I would be happy to shorten the session dramatically and go to a two-year budget instead of a one-year budget.
They do that in Texas, I think, don't they?
They do that in several states. And Texas is one of those that does a biennial budget.
Yeah. And so, but do you think something is going to give this year? Because you have Governor Haley saying we got to have a balancing out if we do a gap. What do you think is the way they're going to go about doing it? Do you have any insight as to what is the thought process, or is it all on the table right now?
It's all on the table right now, and it's all in the Senate. The bills have been passed out of the House. It's in the Senate, and it's an election year. If it's a crossfire, if ever it should be done, it should be this year in the Senate. But the Senate has a tendency to do nothing during an election year, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, we know that. And, you know, we said last year would have been the year to do it, right?
That's right.
And they didn't do it.
Nope.
Now, what do you think about, of course, I mean, it was such a shock, Billy O'Dell. I still can't get over this. And now that we're into filling his seat, a lot of people have said to me, why can't we just wait till the election to go ahead and do this? Why do we need a special election? And I've kind of said, because we won't have any representation through another year if we don't.
That is absolutely correct. You would not, that individual would not take office until January, a year from now.
Right.
And you don't need that. We need representation for Greenwood County and Abbeville County and Anderson County, which that district covers, as quickly as possible. We are in a critical time in the General Assembly, and Greenwood's voice needs to be heard with strength. That means we need another senator down there.
Who do you think from the list of people that have put their hats in? Did I hear that you, was it Gambrell? Who did you think would be good? Have you supported anybody?
Well, I haven't talked to anyone other than Gambrell, and he sits right behind me in the House.
Okay. And
has for 10 years. He is the probable guy to become the chairman of LCI in the House, Labor, Commerce, and Industry Committee. He's a go-to guy for a lot of folks over there, or in the House. And his House district is entirely in that Senate district. So,
but that would
knows,
be... That would be a loss to the House, though, wouldn't it? Sounds like what you're telling me.
It would be a loss to the House, but he would be a definite advantage to have in the Senate to that district. I understand Tripp Padgett has signed up, and another individual from Anderson County has also signed up.
Right.
Geographically, it's going to be very difficult for someone from Greenwood to win that seat.
How did Billy hold it for so long, just out of curiosity? Because I was reading the numbers. Isn't it something like 44,000 from Anderson, and it's only 8,000 or 9,000 or 10,000 over here in our area?
That's correct. Billy won it out of Anderson County and moved into Greenwood County.
Okay. I just was curious. I didn't know, but I thought, wow, I mean, it's amazing that we had the strength that we did down here with Billy.
That is correct. Billy was actually a member, a resident member of the Greenwood delegation, representing a district that very little of it was actually in Greenwood County. And to be if you want to look at honest assessment, it was drawn that way to protect Senator Drummond when he was in the Senate. That part of Greenwood County is hardcore Republican boxes.
I'm beginning to understand now. Well, I know that you have told me in the past that you supported Rand Paul. Are you still supporting Rand?
100%. That's what I told my son today when he asked me about the ability to have his privacy invaded. I said, that's where Rand Paul is the strongest. He is a pure constitutionalist.
Well, how do you think Rand's going to do tonight there, Mike?
I think he's going to fare okay, but I don't think he'll move into the top tier, and I hate that.
How do you see it pulling together here tonight on the Republican side? What do you think?
On the Republican side, I think you'll see, it's according to what the snow does.
Yeah.
If the snow comes, you'll have three groups that will turn out in strength because their hardcore believers are going to go no matter what. That's Trump, Ted Cruz, and Rand Paul.
Okay.
Once you get past those, it's not the same on fire true believers that are going to go to the well no matter what. I think if people flow to the polls in numbers, Rubio could do okay too.
Well, it's kind of nice to be getting to the point where we at least see the people saying something, isn't it?
I'm ready for it.
Yeah.
I'm ready for this field to be narrowed down to three or four candidates so we can really get to the business of getting our nominee in line and not bashing each other at every debate, allowing the moderators to turn it into a food fight instead of a debate on issues.
Exactly. Now, tonight, on the Democratic side, who's going to pull it out?
I think Bernie Sanders is going to go ahead of Hillary Clinton tonight.
All right. This has been a hard thing to watch, hasn't it been, Mike?
Well, my biggest disappointment is on my side of the aisle, I want someone running for commander-in-chief that's at least took basic training in the military.
Okay. Well, that's a little bit hard to find in this group, isn't it?
I don't see it in this group. Of course, now, if you wanted to talk about Hillary, which I'm glad to do, she has dodged mortar rounds running across an airport. Wait a minute, that was a false statement, though. That was another Hillary lie. So,
yeah. Well, this is getting. I just sit back and look at all this stuff, and I just go, "What is happening here?" Don't you, Mike?
Yes. I wonder, and it goes back to what I said earlier of why I put the bill in with term limits and an average salary so that the average individual could go and represent government. We've got government that is controlled by special interest. We've got government that is self-absorbed. It's out of control. And I see that at all levels of government.
Oh, you're right. You're right. You are so right. Hey, listen, I understand you're putting your name in the hat again.
I am.
Okay. You haven't got aspirations beyond this because I'm telling you what, you've been dancing on the national stage here. I just was wondering, were you going for a higher office or were you satisfied to be representing the people of Greenwood and Lawrence down there in Columbia?
Oh, I was asked at the press conference. They brought up the fact that this was twice in 2 weeks that I've been on the national stage. Are you looking at something on the national level? I started laughing. And they asked it as a serious question. And I gave them an answer that, well, they didn't quite know how to take it. And I said, I think I've had conversations with Donald Trump, and I have had conversations with Donald Trump. That was not a falsehood.
You're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood. Oh, do tell. What did you have conversations about?
Well, I told them that here's the way I posed it, Ann. I said, I have had several conversations with Donald Trump, and he is going to need a press secretary.
I'm sorry.
You got it. You
I'm
got
sorry.
It. Most of them did not.
Okay. All right. Well, listen, what do you think about Governor Haley now?
I'd rather not talk about that.
Okay. All right. I just thought if you were going to be a national press secretary.
I hope she gets a vice presidential nod so I can share her with the other 49 states.
Ah, I see. I get it. Okay. Well, it looks like, although I think she would have a tough time with... I just wonder how she would be if Trump was the nominee.
She will not get a glance if Trump is the nominee.
Okay.
It's got to be Jeb Bush or Marco Rubio before she's going to have a shot at vice president, I think.
Very interesting. I guess that's why all the all our regular powers that be gave her the nod to do the response.
Well... Again, people see what they see.
That's true. That's true. Well, listen, I really want you to come over and sit down so we can have an eyeball-to-eyeball discussion about all these issues, but I appreciate you making good and calling us this afternoon.
And I appreciate the opportunity. As I've said, every time I've been on your show, you give me a chance to talk to my constituents. You ask hard questions, but you're fair. And every time I come over there, whatever conversation you want to have with me, you have facts in front of you. That's more than I can say for a whole bunch of your colleagues. You know what? Two reports are out today over the weekend. The Sun-Times out of Myrtle Beach said that it was a continuation of the flag debate is what this bill was all about.
Oh, come on.
The Greenville News editorial said it was all about my proponent being a proponent of the Second Amendment. So there's the bias still in place by the editors of those two newspapers.
Well, there you go. That's why you're right here with us on WCRS this afternoon, correct?
That is absolutely correct.
Mike Pitts, Representative Mike Pitts, thanks for calling us. I'll be calling you and get you over here, and we'll sit down and have a tete-a-tete with water and tea. How about that?
I look forward to it, and seeing my friend when she comes in and barks at me.
Okay, sounds good, Mike. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you. Bye-bye.